The Castles of Othlin and Dunbane by Anne Radcliffe. Chapter 1. On the northeast coast of Scotland, in the most romantic part of the Highlands, stood the castle of Athlin, an edifice built on the summit of a rock, whose base was in the sea. This pile was venerable from its antiquity and from its Gothic structure, but more venerable from the virtues which it enclosed. It was the residence of the still beautiful widow and the children of the noble Earl of Athlin, who was slain by the hand of Malcolm, a neighboring chief, proud, oppressive, revengeful, and still residing in all the pomp of feudal greatness within a few miles of the castle of Athlin. Encroachment on the domain of Athlin was the occasion of the animosity which subsisted between the chiefs. Frequent broils had happened between their clans, in which that of Athlin had generally been victorious. Malcolm, whose pride was touched by the defeat of his people, whose ambition was curbed by the authority, and whose greatness was rivaled by the power of the earl, conceived for him that deadly hatred which opposition to its favorite passions naturally excites in a mind like his, haughty and unaccustomed to control, and he meditated his destruction. He planned his purpose with all that address which so eminently marked his character, and in a battle which was attended by the chiefs of each party in person, he contrived, by a curious finesse, to entrap the earl, accompanied by a small detachment, in his wiles, and there slew him. A general rout of his clan ensued, which was followed by a dreadful slaughter, and a few only escaped to tell the horrid catastrophe to Matilda. Overwhelmed by the news, and deprived of those numbers which would make revenge successful, Matilda forbore to sacrifice the lives of her few remaining people to a feeble attempt at retaliation, and she was constrained to endure in silence her sorrows and her injuries. Inconsolable for his death, Matilda had withdrawn from the public eye into this ancient seat of feudal government, and there, in the bosom of her people and her family, had devoted herself to the education of her children. One son and one daughter were all that survived to her care, and their growing virtues promised to repay all her tenderness. Osbert was in his 19th year. Nature had given him a mind ardent and susceptible, to which education had added refinement and expansion. The visions of genius were bright in his imagination and his heart, unchilled by the touch of disappointment, glowed with all the warmth of benevolence. When first we enter on the theater of the world and begin to notice its features, young imagination heightens every scene, and the warm heart expands to all around it. The happy benevolence of our feelings prompts us to believe that everybody is good, and excites our wonder why everybody is not happy. We are fired with indignation at the recital of an act of injustice, and at the unfeeling vices of which we are told. At a tale of distress, our tears flow a full tribute to pity. At a deed of virtue, our heart unfolds, our soul aspires. We bless the action and feel ourselves the doer. As we advance in life, imagination is compelled to relinquish a part of her sweet delirium. We are led reluctantly to truth, through the paths of experience, and the objects of our fond attention are viewed with a severer eye. Here an altered scene appears. Frowns, where late were smiles. Deep shades, where late was sunshine. Mean passions or disgusting apathy stain the features of the principal figures. We turn indignant from a prospect so miserable, and court again the sweet illusions of our early days. But ah, they are fled forever. Constrained, therefore, to behold objects in their more genuine hues, their deformity is by degrees less painful to us. The fine touch of moral susceptibility, by frequent irritation, becomes callous, and too frequently we mingle with the world, till we are added to the number of its votaries. Mary, who was just 17, had the accomplishments of riper years, with the touching simplicity of youth. The graces of her person were inferior only to those of her mind, which illumined her countenance with inimitable expression. 12 years had now elapsed since the death of the earl.